What is up, everyone? You guys are listening to or watching Fireside Yankees. You're hearing myself here, Ryan Garcia. To the left of me, I've got Chris Drew and Jacob. We've got the whole panel here. Everyone's here to talk about what's been just another rumor-filled week. At least there's like more things to talk about. It's not completely empty. It's just that there hasn't been a lot of action to follow. It's been a lot of talk, a lot of whispers, not a lot of action. For Jacob, has been an exciting week, though. Jacob's having a good week, man. So Jacob, I'll start with you. Like, how you doing, man? How you feeling, bro?
Oh man, I'm elated right now. Like, the U is back. Everyone knows it. We're gonna win on Martin Luther King Day. So next week when we record these on Monday nights, so at like 6 o'clock. So I'm gonna record. Then I'm gonna head over to my buddy's place, who went to Indiana, and they're throwing a big shindig. So I'm gonna be in enemy territory once again, and we're gonna come out victorious. So I'm ready to roll with this college football playoff.
Chris, how are we doing, man? Do you second the opinion that Miami will come out on top, defeat, upset Indiana, and claim a national championship?
Brother, I'm fully in baseball mode. I had a blast last couple days watching Red Sox podcast meltdown about Reggie to the Cubs. Like, meltdown. I heard Devers' name probably 150 times. Because remember, when they traded Devers, the whole reasoning was like, look, well, we're Bregman long term. We need to be better defensively. Like, leader, we want leadership. And so, well, I do expect Indiana to win it. I've been just enjoying Red Sox fans just crash out over Bregman to the Cubs.
I can't lie, man. This is really toxic. So I was asleep when Bregman signs. I was at my girlfriend's, and I'm asleep, and I wake up, and I see the news. I'm like, oh, my God, this is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know the first thing I did? I made sure to check.
Section 10.
The Sports Hub, like everything. Notifications on. All the way home this morning, while I was working this morning, I was listening to it. And I had a great time listening to it. But I also have to say, I didn't tweet anything too crazy because it could happen to us. Mm-hmm. Technically could. I don't think it will, but I don't want to like be an a-hole.
Isn't Bellinger our Bregman?
Yes, but I will say I think there's a small difference, and we'll get into Bellinger and all this in the sense that I think Alex Bregman, the issue was never going to be a lack of suitors for Bregman, or it never seemed like it was a lack of suitors for Bregman, and unlike with the Yankees, the reporting seems like the Red Sox are just kind of like playing with their food, and then just like the report that I've heard from, I think Robert Murray mentioned this, or no, I think it was mentioned by might have been mentioned by Jared Carrabas, where what happened was they essentially already lost a player. Bregman had kind of gotten the bigger offer from the Cubs already, and the Red Sox last second were like, oh, shoot, okay, here's 165, crazy deferrals that would give him less money over a longer period of time, and no trade clause. I think the report from Bellinger is that there are no deferrals in it, so it would be all present-day value, and I would be stunned. Like, I would actually be stunned if the Yankees didn't sign Bellinger over not including a no-trade clause. So I guess this is our natural way to segue into the Bellinger stuff. The TLDR guys, they've got a five-year, $155 million offer on the table. Chris Kirschner mentioned it was 5 years, $31 million annual average salary. John Heyman said it was around $155 for 5 years, so I'm assuming that's the number we're playing ball with. That is an offer. That is certainly an offer. Chris, we'll start with you. What are your thoughts on that offer? Like, first thought that came to your head when you saw that report?
I wouldn't want to go any higher than that. Like, that to me is like the max. And so seeing this offer put out there, it's like, okay, like, this is the Yankees being intentional. Like, this is probably the maximum of what he's worth. There was the report that he wants 37 a year. There's all that out there. So for me, it's like, okay, like, the Yankees are tired of waiting is what this report is to me. Like, they wanted to get this done. They feel like it's taking too long. But Bellinger wants longer and more. So I think that's a fair deal. I think it's a more than fair deal. That's kind of the limit of where I'm comfortable going with Bellinger. I don't know where Jacob's at with this.
Yeah, I probably would say, was it 531 a year? That's probably above. I was saying my limit was 530 a year, so I'd say probably above my limit right now. But realistically, based on the other contracts that have been signed by position players, I think Boris is at least going to want to beat all of the other ones. He's going to want to get more than he got. Then he's going to want to get more for Bellinger than what Schwarber got, than what Bregman got, than what Alonso got, because Bellinger's a younger player. And looking at it right now, I have the list of the free agents up. Bregman, including deferrals, he's really only making about $30.5 million per year in present day value. So that puts him basically in the exact same, right in the middle of Schwarber and Alonso, who are only $5 million apart total. So my estimation is that unless someone else, unless like the Mets jump in and they really pump up the bidding here, I think Belly's going to end up with 5 years, 31, like just enough, maybe 31.5, something just enough to get him the biggest contract of these, of this free agent class. But like save for Tucker and Cease. But I think that's going to be the benchmark, is just beating Alonso and Schwarber. And I mean, if it costs a few extra million, why not? But I am kind of uncomfortable with this over 30 million per year number that we're seeing flying around.
And I'd have to agree. Look, I think it's, you could make a really strong argument that's more than what he should get. I will say I would prefer the Yankees to pay more on a per year basis than I'm comfortable with than give more years than I'm comfortable with. So I prefer this structure of 5 years and a higher AAV than I'd like than the inverse, which was the DJ LeMahieu contract. Now, it's not like the structure that the Yankees seem to have in place for Bellinger is inherently better than the LeMahieu one. There are warts to that as well, which is that if you get the same outcome, it will limit you from doing things. Like, it is, there's just more dead money on a year-to-year basis. But given where Bellinger's at as an athlete, I would assume there's at least 2 or 3 years left of being a good player who returns enough war to make the money not really, like, an issue. I will say, though, with him seeking a 7-year deal, man, I'm confident he doesn't get it. I'm confident he doesn't get it from anybody else. And I believe that a lot of what Buster Olney's reporting, or was reporting, I think the Yankees wanted that information out there. Because you're not getting that from Scott Boras. You're not getting that from Boras. You're getting that from the team itself. So I think it's a good thing to have out there if you're trying to gain some leverage. And I think the public, like, this is probably the most united I've ever seen the fan base on a topic, which is the idea that, like, this guy got an offer that is more than fair. And
yeah, I think that was what I was going to bring up next. Like, literally every single post I'm seeing with the, like, on Fireside, on every Yankees social media post that people are reporting these numbers, everyone in the comments is like, well, if he doesn't take this, then see ya. Like, we don't want to pay you a 6th or 7th year, yeah, I feel like, especially in the off season where it's been so, everyone's itching for the move. Everyone wants this big move to get the fan base united as we don't want to pay this guy more than what we're offering him right now. Like, that's pretty impressive by the Yankees to spin.
I mean,
this
that's
into
the line
a
in the sand, right?
PR
like they
move,
drew
yeah.
the line in the sand. Like, people are complaining that we're not getting anything done. Well, here's why. It's not on us. It's on Boras and Bellinger. And so, no, you're right. I mean, it united the fans.
And I also think, and I kind of wanted to get both of your perspectives on this. You know, I want to give both the perspective of the team and the agent. Because I think a big question going around right now is, why is Scott Boras holding out? I think it's a very normal and fair fan reaction. My initial reaction was, are you bleeping kidding me? You didn't take this deal? Like, you're just being an a-hole. But from the agent's perspective, and again, I want to get your opinions on this, with Cody Bellinger and the Yankees, it doesn't – I know that the reports are they're going to engage in talks with Bichette and Tucker. I don't buy that. I don't think they're going to sign Bo Bichette. I don't think they're going to sign Kyle Tucker. That's independent of my opinion of whether they should be either after player, but I don't believe they will land either player or be serious players for either. Boras is going to use that to their advantage. He knows the team wants Bellinger. He knows that there's not really another big money free agent they're going to spend that money on. And he also knows that while, yes, the fan base would, you know, is united in this belief that they should not give Bellinger more than that, I think the fan base would also be united in their disgust if their most expensive signing was Trent Grisham this year. So, you know, Chris, I'll start with you here. Or Jacob, I'll start with you here because I want to get your opinion first. And then Chris's. Do you think this is fair play from Boras, or do you think he's overplaying his hand at this point?
I mean, I think Boras is just trying to use his leverage. He's been doing this forever. He's probably the best agent of any sport of all time. So it's like, if he thinks that this patience, this waiting game, will get him and his client more money, then he's going to do it. And the way I look at things, it's Bellinger and Tucker, the only outfield options right now. And there are more than two teams that are trying to contend, that are willing to spend a lot of money, that are going to be that have outfield positions that could use help. So if you look at Toronto's going to, everyone thinks Toronto's the favorite for Tucker right now, right? Okay, yeah. if they sign Tucker first, then you're going to have the Mets, the Dodgers, and the Yankees all looking at Bellinger. Then maybe, hey, the Mets say, we haven't made that big move yet that all the fans are itching for. Maybe we'll jump in on Bellinger now in late January, early February. So that's the hope from Boris. So I understand what he's doing. But also, like, from the player perspective, if I was Bellinger, after he walked me through that really long offseason where I didn't sign until spring training started a few years ago, I'd be kind of nervous, right? I'd be like, hey, man, I liked playing with the Yankees. They're offering me pretty fair money. What's going on? Like, eventually, there might come to a point. I'm not sure what Bellinger, obviously, I'm not in Bellinger's head, but there might come a point where it's too much for Bellinger to be waiting, to be playing this waiting game again. So I think the Yankees are in a pretty strong position of leverage, but Boris shouldn't just cave because we want him to be back on the Yankees immediately. So I think it makes sense from both parties from where they're at right now.
I mean, what were the reports early? The reports early was that, like, Bellinger's not going to sign until after Tucker signs per the request of Scott Boris. And so we're watching it play out. And, like, Boris can right now ask for the 7 years, probably thinking once Tucker signs, if Tucker signs first, that the years will be something that other teams will fold to, like Jacob said. So it's like, I do think that Tucker and Bellinger kind of having a standoff because whichever one signs first, the other one has way more leverage and way more suitors. And obviously that will kind of invite the irrational spending. And right now it's kind of you're waiting to see who blinks first. And the three people that I'm looking at are Yankees, Bellinger, Boris, and then I guess Tucker. So that's a fourth person who's going to blink first. And right now, while you're the Yankees, you know, you're kind of like floating the Tucker thing out there, trying to get Boris to blink. But I mean, all three of us don't expect the Yankees to sign Kyle Tucker. So it's like, if you're floating that out as a bluff, it's not going to work. So we're just playing a huge waiting game right now. And it's like, what is it? What's that game where you usually shoot the bow and arrow in the air and the last person to leave the circle kind of wins? I mean, that's kind of what we're watching right now. That bow's in the air. Who's going to jump out of the circle first? And right now, I feel like Boris is kind of smiling, thinking that he's got the cards. But Jacob's right. If Bellinger wants to go ahead and get this done, Boris works for him, not the other way around. And so yeah, if he does get nervous, you got to just pull the trigger and go.
I do think it's also a reminder. Like, the Bregman thing is tied to this because it's a reminder that these are Scott Boras clients. Mm-hmm. You do not hire Scott Boras as your agent to take hometown discounts or discounts of the team that is the incumbent in your free agent class. You sign with Scott Boras to get the most money possible, which is Cody Bellinger's CBA-negotiated right to do. He is doing nothing that is against the CBA, that is abnormal for a free agent, that is even, I would consider, unethical. The Yankees have essentially launched a public smear campaign against Cody Bellinger, which, again, is in their CBA-negotiated right to do. They are allowed to do all of this stuff. I don't think there's anything wrong with either side, because there is a chance that some team, like, let's say the Blue Jays, let's say they miss out on Kyle Tucker. Maybe they go, I want to screw the Yankees over so badly right now. I want to screw them over so badly. I'm going to steal Cody Bellinger from them. Because, let's be honest, if they sign Cody Bellinger, dude, what are the Yankees going to do? Right? So, I guess we can kind of move into pivots here. Because I still think Bellinger will come back. And I don't, like, do you guys feel like Bellinger isn't coming back?
I feel like Bellinger's coming back.
I'm at like 75-80% that Bellinger is going to be pinstripes next year. And I think it's going to be for something around what we've offered already. Maybe we'll go up to a sixth year, but I think it's going to be like around 5 or 6 and around $30 million per year.
I think they should just, like, me personally, just give him some deferred money. Just keep this LT hit where it's at.
We don't do that.
Yeah, I was going to say, it'd be really outside the personality, bro. Like, how has come outside? We don't do the deferred game.
We
run this like a business. We don't run this like a hedge fund.
Look, that's fine. That's what I would do. But hey, I'm not an owner of a baseball team, so that's not really my.
No, I would do it too. Deferred money feels like the cheat code.
It's also, again, it's one of those things where, like, it's hard for me to see or justify the Yankees going above where they're at, and it's hard for me to criticize them if they lose Bellinger with this being their offer. Because I have a hard time seeing – I would call Scott Boras' bluff if I was them. Like, I'm trying to think, if I was in their shoes, I'm living in the moment right now, not in hindsight, in the moment. what would I have done differently? The only thing I would have done differently is, and this is not really a GM thing, this is an owner thing, I would have expressed real, genuine interest in Kyle Tucker, even if it was just to spook Scott Boras. The fact that they're really just not in, and it's really, like, the fact that it's impossible to convince anybody that you're in makes it really hard for you to convince Boras that you're in. Like, Jack Curry, it's kind of funny. Everyone kind of considers Jack Curry like a mouthpiece for the Yankees, which I disagree with. He essentially killed the idea they could use Bichette as leverage because he came out and was like, that's unlikely. That's not happening. If he never says that, I think Boras could have actually been spooked.
I don't think there's not enough there for Boras to be spooked because, like, it's already put out there that we don't view him as a shortstop.
Right, but if there was even the chance that you would be willing to just spend money, like, there's not a chance the Yankees spend real money on a different player.
But Boras is a pro. He knew this. Like, the reports and shit, I don't think it's going to affect him as much. I do think the Kyle Tucker, right? They've talked about recently, the Yankees have checked in on Kyle Tucker, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, it seems like we're the distant fourth place team for him right now. I think there may be, like, we probably have a number on Tucker, and if he falls to that number, we'll be serious. But I think we've all kind of known that it wasn't likely for most of the offseason. But I don't think that means that our interest is not real. I just think it means that we feel that he's a worse value for the range of contract he's seeking right now than Bellinger is. So that one's a little bit interesting to me. Like, I don't think Bichette was ever a realistic option at all. I think that's literally just leverage. You're going to throw the name out there, kind of half-assed attempt to be like, hey, we're pivoting off of Bellinger. But like I said, it's like 80% Bellinger, in my opinion. Like, the only way that Tucker's possible is everyone else drops out for whatever reason, and then he just drops into our lap. So I don't know. What do you guys think about Tucker? Do you think that's any chance of happening or no?
Yeah, I think that if we get to short-term territory, he's going to be a Dodger. And look, this is, in a sense, this is both, yes, you can blame the Yankees for this, but also, like, at this point in time, there's nothing the Yankees can do differently to change this. If all things are equal, you will go to the Dodgers. That is where free agency kind of feels right now. And again, you can blame the Yankees for not being that team. But in terms of what they could have done about it this offseason, there isn't anything they could have done about that. So, you know, again, it's not to say you shouldn't feel like, it's not to invalidate the idea that you should be frustrated by the fact that you are not the flagship franchise of baseball right now. It's more so to say that there is nothing they could do to change that without winning back-to-back World Series championships, or without winning a championship. So there's nothing they could have done since November to change that. So that's kind of, I don't know. It's a weird explanation of, like, you can be frustrated. Frustration's normalized here, but also they can't really do anything about it right now. So, not that your complaints shouldn't exist, but that it doesn't change anything. You know what I mean? It's weird. It's a weird kind of argument, or not argument, like, statement I'm making there. Do you guys think there's a chance to even sign, like, one of the pitchers remaining? Like, I don't think they'll sign out of them, but, like, a Suarez or Valdez, is there any ideas to that?
I don't think so, no.
I mean, I floated, like, a Chris Bassett a few weeks ago, and I think that's a possibility if it gets to, like, February and we don't have any trade partners for the rotation. But besides that, like, I don't think we're going to go for one of the top dogs.
Yeah, I would agree. The other guy that's been floated, the other two guys that have been floated are Nico Hoerner and Luis Robert. Should we just kill the Hoerner dream here? Like, the reporting from today is very much like, you're an idiot if you think you're trading for Hoerner. It's not happening.
No, I mean, I don't think that was realistic unless we were to overpay severely for 1 year of a player who hasn't played shortstop in 3 years, which I have my reservations about. I know everyone wants Hoerner because he's low strikeout, at, like, solid, slightly above average bat, consistent, good defense. But I don't think it would have been worth it for us to go to that price. And based on what the Cubs reporters are reporting, they're not going to move him, which, I mean, it makes sense. They just signed a third baseman for close to $200 million. Why are you going to trade away another 4 or 5 win player at what's supposed to be the beginning of a contention window? So, yeah, that's completely dead. Robert may be a different story. But, yeah, Nico Hoerner was never going to happen.
I think with Hoerner, too, when you talk about, like, the overpay, what makes Hoerner very appealing is that every single year he seems like he's going to be a good player. But he's never, like, the best player on your team, and he's never a great player, period. I love Nico Hoerner. I would love Nico Hoerner on this team. But I also recognize in this world where you're trying, like, you have to assess your needs, you have to assess what you need on this roster, given where the pitching market is at and where they seem to be most likely to acquire one, it would be very foolish for them to expend trade assets that are it's a very finite resource to acquire a shortstop when they really need a starting pitcher. And if you really want to add a shortstop that badly, like, he might be available at the deadline, let's say, or somebody might be available at the deadline. Like, I think you need to – I don't think they have enough starting pitching. I've said that enough, and I'm not going to, like, rehash that whole point again. But I do think you have to have priorities with your needs, and I think this is more so a hatred against Volpe, which, again, fans are entitled to not like the guy. That's fine. He was a disappointment this past year. I get it. But I think it has more to do with Volpe than it has to do with Horner. Am I crazy for saying
no,
that?
No, you're 100% right. I think shortstop right now is probably the fourth on my priority list. Probably goes starting pitching, bullpen, left field, and then shortstop. So, yeah, it's just people don't want Volpe to be playing shortstop anymore, which is, I think, would be a very sell-low moment for us to give up on him right now after he played a full season with a torn rotator cuff. But don't clip this and don't kill me for saying that I still believe in Anthony Volpe.
Hey, I mean, look, I think that when people talk about, like, believing in Volpe or not, I think a lot of people view it as like, oh, so you think he's going to hit like 300? Like, no, you just don't think he's going to be a 2024 Anthony Volpe is, I think, what most of us, most of our, like, hope is in terms of what he can be again, which is this nine hitter who plays really good defense, steals a bunch of bases, and, you know, is a positive player overall because of things that have nothing to do with his actual bat, which is where I'm at.
I just want to bring up Anthony Volpe in 2024, 3.5 F-WAR. Nico Horner, 2024, 3.9 F-WAR. If you get healthy Volpe and he's playing good defense, it's not a big enough upgrade to go to Horner for 1 year to spend half the farm on. I'm sorry, it's just not.
And you also have to think, like, the pitching. Like, the pitching is such a big need to me. Like, you cannot ignore the pitching staff. You ignore the rotation. Again, like, I have a hard time taking them seriously as contenders because you need a set amount of – you need a number of arms, in my opinion, for me to consider you a contender. And I think they're aware of this. I don't think they're blind to it, and I do think they'll pull down a starter. Now, that starter won't be Edward Cabrera because right after we recorded our podcast – and I think it's funny because the timeline of the Cabrera thing, Sunday is, like, the peak of the hype. Like, 4 p.m. on Sunday – I think this guy's a Yankee. Monday, it's a little less, like, certain, but it's like, I think he'll become a Yankee eventually. And then I think Wednesday, he gets traded to the Cubs. So yeah,
shout out Hubs.
Yeah. Jeez, dude. Oh, man. That's such a – it's kind of like – you guys know that rookie guy for football, and the one thing he was wrong about was thinking the Giants are going to trade up for Drake May. This isn't the same level because Drake May, I think, is significantly better at being a quarterback than Edward Cabrera is at being a starting pitcher. But it had that same feel to me of, like, seriously, the one time you're wrong, are you kidding me, man? Like, really, dude? Everyone's going to be wrong. I'm not going to be a complete a-hole. But he's not a New York Yankee. He's on the Cubs. Would you guys have matched the offer the Cubs made for Cabrera, which was Christian Hernandez? It was like a DSL guy, and then the headliner was Owen Casey, who I know people consider the best prospect in the organization. He's not. He's like their number four prospect. He's not, like, people, like, are like, oh, it's like trading George Lombard Jr. No, it's not. It's not. But with that information, Chris, we'll start with you. Would you have made that deal?
Just real quick. I have an issue with the Owen thing in totality, him being viewed as, like, you know, this can't-miss guy. But his strikeout percentage in AAA was higher than Spencer Jones. And I know Cubs people kill Spencer Jones all the time. So I just have issue with that kind of discourse. But, I don't think I would have overspent them. I spent more for Cabrera than they did. And the other part of it is like, I think because of that, you'll have to overspend for Horner if you ever want to land him, because they're going to look to replenish their farm. But no, I had no issue with the Yankees not going up to that offer.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think I see it as Casey is he's like their version of Spencer Jones. Mm-hmm. Maybe a little bit more refined bat to ball, a little bit more refined chase rate wise. But at the same time, Spencer Jones probably a better defender, probably better athlete.
And the K rate, I don't know how much you value the K rate, but I believe, like, Owens was higher than Spencer's last year.
I think Jones was higher than Casey's in terms of, like, whiff rate, I think.
Okay.
So Jones did strike out more in AAA because he had that, like, if you remember, his back, like, went out in July, and then
he was striking out before his back went out too. He had a 400 ISO before his back went out. That was interesting.
Well, that was the second time the back went out, wasn't it?
Yes. Which is a, it's got, like, that is a notable thing in this. Like, he's tall, not going to say his actual height. He's tall, and he's, you know, he's got back issues. Like, that's not great. You know what I mean? But,
well, it's like maybe the swing adjustment, a lot more torque kind of can cause that, but I don't know.
He also played, like, I think I could be wrong on this, but he did miss time earlier in the year with a – it was a core issue. So, like, he's had two separate IL issues. Also to note on the strikeout thing, before the deadline in AAA, 25% strikeout rate. And then after – like, this is when the back issue happened. And I think there is a Miami trade I want to mention that – or, like, proposal that was technically out there that I think they could regret. But I don't think Cabrera is going to be a live-to-forget situation, at least based on the price. Like, I'm not happy about it. I'm not, and I'm, like, a little worried about, like, the number of starters that are going to be traded that are left and where you stand and, like, the prospect pool and all that. But, I mean, look, the guy had a partial tear in his UCL. I liked him a lot. I like Cabrera a lot. But at the same time, Casey's also a very specific kind of prospect where, as Jacob noted, probably a little more, like, major league ready than Spencer Jones, but also not as good as George Lombard Jr., but also a position player. And most of your prospects in that tier of, like, George Lombard Jr. and then, like, potentially being a top 100 prospect or pitchers. So Miami clearly wanted bats. I think they just picked up two bats and a like a lower level arm. You can't, like, say if you wanted to make this deal, you need a bat as good as Owen Casey or valued as highly as Owen Casey or as major league ready. And if the Marlins, like, hey, we just don't think Jones is that right now, I don't think you were going to be able to make that deal.
Well, I mean, I'm sure if I heard that they've liked Jones in the past, and I'm sure they would have been interested in him, but, like, we probably would have had to give him Jones and someone else to beat Casey if they felt that Casey was the better player, which is, like, do you want to give Jones and someone else for someone who's got damaged goods in his right arm? It's like, I don't know. I don't know if you're willing to do that. Like, we've shown in the past that we really believe in Spencer Jones, and we're willing to take that gamble in the hope that he becomes the next superstar here. So, it is... Edward Cabrera, the type of guy that you want to trade, you're trading, like, the ultimate lottery ticket for Edward Cabrera, who himself is a very high-risk player. Like, I'm not sure if the Yankees would have been willing to do that.
It's boom or bust for boom or bust, and if you, like, if it swings the, like, the super worst way for you, it looks horrible.
I also will say when it comes to the Spencer Jones and, like, Miami liking him, I think the deal they'll live to regret a little bit is the Sandy one, because Sandy, well, man, I can't even say that, because every time I think of that, like, saying that out loud, I remember that then Cam Schlittler wouldn't have gotten the starts, and you may not have won that wild card series, and you don't know what Cam, like, there is, it's a, like, trade trees, trade history is very complicated. The guy I want to talk about in a little bit is, like, both, I want to talk about both Gore and Peralta. I had them higher on my board of trade targets than I had – or pitching targets than I had Cabrera. That is not, like, post-trade cope. I had them higher on my board, and I referenced that in the video I did on Sunday talking about the report from Hubs and all that. I did that. I have an article out there about it. If you end up pulling down a Gore Peralta trade, then I'm not at all upset you didn't trade for Cabrera. I'm actually pretty happy you didn't trade for Cabrera. But I do think there's a fair amount of, like, unease in the fan base about, are they actually going to pull that off? They've been close, no cigar. I'll start with Jacob here. Jacob, how concerned are you about their ability to land a starter? Because, hey man, there's like a month until pitchers and catchers got a report.
I mean, I think it's ticking up right now. Like, the closer you get, the more kind of anxiety I'm having about, wow, is Yarbrough going to be the game five starter of the regular season? But, I mean, Gore's still out there. Gore has been the number one guy for me for the last probably since it became clear that we weren't going to sign Imai. So I like the idea of Gore. I like that the difference between him and Cabrera is that he only has 2 years control left versus Cabrera's three. So even though I think he's the better pitcher, he might come out to a similar cost. It depends on how who else is in on it and stuff like that. It depends on how the Nationals view Gore as a future within their future plans. And it also depends on how the Nationals view our farm system. So there's a million things that go into it. I still don't think Freddy Peralta is going to happen. I've said this probably every episode I've been on this podcast. I don't think they're going to trade him. It would take an extreme overpay for it to make sense for them to trade him. And I don't think we have the assets to make that overpay if other teams are going to be in on this. So I don't think there's a universe where Freddy Peralta is a Yankee. And I could see Mackenzie Gore still. And if that doesn't happen, then we're going to have to look at some of the veteran options in free agency, which aren't flashy, but like I said, Chris Bassitt is a pretty good pitcher.
Part of the Cabrera allure, I think, for all of us was the thought that because there was some of the injury concern that you could get him without spending, you know, big farm, I guess, assets to get him. I feel more comfortable spending some decent size, you know, farm assets to get Mackenzie Gore because I don't worry about the health as much. And Mackenzie Gore's a better pitcher anyway. But I am worried, yes, to answer Ryan's question, because, again, like week over week over week, we come do this show, we come have this panel, and there's no movement. It's just like rumor, pass ship, rumor, pass ship, rumor, pass ship. And it's like, okay, like at some point, we all three of us acknowledge that this team needs to add a pitcher or two. And it's like we're now kind of like just waiting for one, and that's like not a good feeling to have as things kind of move super slowly.
I think for me, part of it, and I think a lot of the fan base, and I really think this is an important part of this conversation, Chris kind of alluded to this, just getting something done, right? Like, the fact that you had the excitement and it didn't happen makes it worse.
Mm-hmm.
And look, I think even if we want to be rational about this and talk about, hey, at the end of the day, let the offseason play out, like, it is the middle of January, and they haven't added a starter, they haven't added a real reliever. Like, they technically have added Cade Winquest. Paul Blackman. Like, it's not what I envision when I say, like, a bullpen upgrade. And Bellinger isn't back. So, the Reds, again, like, the Red Sox kind of are, like, this blaring red warning sign of what can go wrong when you think your guy is going to come back and you're dealing with a Scott Boras client. And, I mean, like, if you told me the Cubs are going to – if you told me, all right, the Red Sox, their only competition is the Cubs, or serious competition is the Cubs, you're like, they're going to get Bregman back. The Cubs? Yeah. Are you kidding me? And I have that attitude with the Mets a little bit where it's like David Stearns is going to give out a 6-year deal to Cody Bellinger. Okay, I'll see it when I believe it. I don't want to see it to have – I don't want to ever believe it, right? I'm going to have to see it to believe it. If I believe it, it means it happened. So I don't want to see it. I don't. And when it comes to starting pitching, this ties back to this in the sense of, whereas at least I have the comfort in knowing I believe the Yankees are the team that wants Bellinger the most, I cannot sit here and confidently assess that the Yankees want a starter so bad that they will do something that the other 29 teams in baseball wouldn't, for like a Freddie Peralta or Mackenzie Gore. That is where my fear comes in. It's not that they don't think it's an issue. It's that I believe that they have a price that they won't match these starters, and they would rather strike out than overpay. And I don't like that personally.
Do you feel like there's some prospect arrogance there too, Ryan, out of curiosity?
I don't think it's an arrogance as much as it's a they don't want to overpay. They don't want to lose a trade. I do believe there's a little bit of like that. And this is the one thing I push back on a little bit with like modern baseball philosophy, which is like there's a little bit of you shouldn't have a greater sense of urgency depending on X, Y, and Z. You should make the right baseball move. It's kind of it's funny because it's like there's like a basketball analogy to be made here. You should always make the right basketball player. You shouldn't always try and score. And I do think there's merits to that and there's some flaws. For baseball, I think there's merits to that and there's some flaws. If the Yankees had made the Sandy trade, which would have felt like the big baller Yankees, we're a contending move, you maybe don't beat the Red Sox. But on the other hand, I think that if they walk in, if they had added a third baseman, for example, to go into 2025, they win the division. And all postseason changes. Yeah. So they have to be willing to be uncomfortable. Let's say the Brewers are like, all right, we really like Carlos LaGrange. And you know what? We don't want to trade Peralta, but for LaGrange, we think he's got a special arm talent. We'll take him alongside their pieces, and that is a condition where we'll trade Peralta. I don't care that he's a rental. I don't care if you never see him again after 2026. You have to make that trade. For Gore, I don't care if you're overpaying. I would rather you do something than do nothing. This rotation, as it stands right now, it's not that Yarbrough's pitching. I get it. You're injured. I get it. That's cool. We had Carrasco and Stroman open last year. We won 94 games. That's fine. You don't have enough arms. If you went into spring training and simulated the outcome with these six guys, Blackburn's not one of them. Elmer's the sixth guy. You run out. You're signing like Carlos Carrasco again to pitch for you because you're not going to have enough arms. I guarantee you at least two of these six guys get hurt. Guarantee it. I'd put money on it today.
No, I agree with you. I'm just like at the point where it's like it's unique to see them not willing to go uncomfortable to get a pitcher. And I actually wonder, is it because there's a, you know, maybe a little bit of ridiculous faith in the young guys? Maybe
I think it's a baseball wide thing though. That's where like I don't want to criticize the Yankees specifically for it. Because the Red Sox.
Well, again, no, not as a criticism. Not as a criticism at all. Because yeah. I know that the Red Sox did get uncomfortable. I'm talking about more of like the standpoint of like, okay, like I have so much trust in some of these young guys that I'm not willing to overspend because these guys are so good. So it's like if you're not willing to go uncomfortable, it's like, okay, like why is that? Is it just an overarching confidence on the young guys? Because here we go. We've seen the Yankees go uncomfortable previously. Like I don't know. We've never talked about this, but the Max Fried deal to me was a sign of uncomfortable.
Oh, like, that's crazy.
Was them going very uncomfortable.
Let's not forget, like, the Yankees gave out the largest left-handed pitching contract ever in the history of baseball.
Right.
To a guy who had spent every single year of his major league career having at least one IL stint. And never winning a Cy Young, never being the best pitcher in baseball. Like, that happened. And he was the best, he had the best season of any of the big guys signed. I know Blake Snell is better in the postseason. I get it. Whatever. But you cannot ignore the fact that Max Fried made all of his starts. I'm
no,
sorry.
I agree. So
that
I'm saying, like, Brian, so like we've seen right. them go, we've seen them go willing to be uncomfortable. We've seen them go
yes.
trust their staff to like make sure if they do go uncomfortable, they'll make it work for a year. And so like when I'm hearing these, you know, they're not willing to overspread, they're not willing to kind of part ways with some of these arms. I'm thinking, okay, like is that because they have confidence, or is that because all of a sudden it's been a personality change? Because it's not like they went uncomfortable with Max Fried and ended up being horrible. Like it ended up working.
I think when they get uncomfortable, I think it works.
No,
I can't
me too,
think-
and that's why I'm like, okay, well, why not this time? Because like for me, you continue to stick your hand into the jar until the snake bites you. That yeah. means be uncomfortable. The snake didn't bite you last year. Like you went uncomfortable and it worked out. So why now are you not being uncomfortable? Is it because you really think that, you know, Cruz has it? Is it because you think, you know, LaGrange has it? Like why are you not wanting to go uncomfortable again? And this is where Jacob steps in.
I'm sorry. I'm not trading Carlos LaGrange for 1 year of Freddie Peralta. I'm
no,
sorry.
I agree with you. I would let a truck
hit me for Carlos LaGrange to be traded for Freddie Peralta.
At
45 miles per hour.
Wheeler. I like Freddie Peralta. He's not an ace.
You don't need an ace.
But why?
You don't need an ace.
Why am I trading ace type prices for 1 year of a number two/number three
LaGrange tears his UCL tomorrow. What is he?
I don't know. He's got the best fastball in the minor leagues right now.
But he tears his UCL
Freddie
tomorrow.
Freddie Peralta
what happens?
Tears his UCL tomorrow. What happens?
He does not have the injury history.
Okay, do you like Freddie Peralta more than
pitchers.
Max Fried, Jacob? Just real quick, do you like Freddie Peralta more than Max or
yeah,
no?
I like this question.
Would you say more than Max Fried?
Yeah, who do you like more, Max or Freddie? Out of curiosity.
Max.
Okay, I was curious.
Okay, I agree.
Yeah. No,
me too, but like the Freddie was kind of cracked. Like better, like just like close-ish to Max in this last year. Maybe a little better.
You I don't know, the peripherals, I don't know, they have the best defense every year. I have reservations about Freddie, but listen, you get uncomfortable money wise that's one thing. You get uncomfortable prospect wise when you have a pretty shallow farm for a rental. I can't do that. I understand not wanting to tread into those waters, because eventually you're going to need guys to graduate. You can't contend forever if you're going to be trading at one or two of our top eight farmhand for a rental every year. You can't live like that. And we're listen, if you want to be upset about the Yankees' lack of moves, be upset at Hal for not opening up the payroll, because there's still free agent starters out there right now. We mentioned a bunch of free agent starters that are still available. Go out and get a Framber Valdez. Go and spend some money. Be upset about that. But don't be upset that they're not willing to trade a top 100 arm for one season of a number two starter. I think that's my issue with that.
I'm not upset at all. I'm more saying, is it because they believe in these kids and maybe we should kind of follow suit? Because, like, look, we watched Cam Sloter. Cam Sloter was number one or number two back half of the year for the Yankees. Like, he was outstanding and had one of the great playoff performances. Like, do the Yankees feel like, okay, like, our pitching development is good? Like, one of these two could maybe give you 80% of what Cam got you. And if that's the case, yeah, I agree. Don't move anybody.
I think it's just a matter of value. Like, if why would I overpay ever when I'm the Yankees and I can just buy pitchers on the market?
Well, we have to accept that's not what they're doing. Like the issue is not that I disagree with you. Jacob, you know for a fact, I agree with you that they tap into their farm system too much to sustainably, like, build that baby up the way they can, the way that they draft, the way they've developed from the draft. Like, they've got something there with their drafting development on the pitching side. They need to keep tapping into it, but they have to keep trading these guys away when they should be holding on to some of these guys to either A, trade for this, like have the Godfather offer to make to another team for a superstar, or to turn these guys into these cheap, low-cost big leaguers. Look, Will Warren isn't special, but Will Warren's a very important piece. You'd have to – how much money are you paying somebody on the free agent market right now to provide you what Will Warren provides for $700,000? That's important. But I would also use that pipeline to say, given what we know, which is that the Yankees are not going to sign a big-time starting pitcher, all right, man, look, they'll find another LaGrange. They'll find another, like, top 100 arm. They churn these guys out every single year. And then have covered the farm on Fireside Yankees. They have found one. They have found one guy where it's like, whoa. The only guy who I would consider kind of fake was Thorpe. But that's because we didn't know back then that right-handed changeup guys, they kind of cheese it a little bit, because right-handed changeups are really freaking good in the minor leagues and aren't as good in the big leagues. But that's neither here nor there. He still got you Juan freaking Soto. You know what I mean?
Thorpe sat 92 in AAA. LaGrange sits 100. I don't know. This stuff, you can't teach this. He's
I understand.
A monster.
How like, tall he, is he?
Okay.
He is a tall okay, guy. Man. He's as tall as Spencer Jones. That's
he's,
what I know.
He's exactly one Spencer Jones in height, and he weighs 248 pounds, according to the Fangraphs bio data. He's 22 years old. He just killed it in A-ball and Double-A this year. He moved up to Double-A. He had some walk issues, which is like there's reliever risk there for sure. But it's like I see this guy. If he works out, he has the potential to be one of the best pitchers in baseball. And if he doesn't work out as a starter, I see someone who could be like a Dellin Betances level reliever. So it's like, am I willing to give up that? Like, I don't know. I think that guy, you could say, oh, we're going to find another one of these. Are we? Are we going to find another one of a potentially the best fastball in the minor leagues next year?
Yeah, he's probably definitely harder. He's harder to find than a Cruz, right? Like, I mean, like just that size, the velo. I mean, I love outlier velo. And he's got it in bunches.
And look, I agree that this is like a tough, like this is, I wouldn't trade LaGrange and like three other prospects. LaGrange has to be like the anchor in this deal where that is the case. But I also, I'm willing to kind of eat a little bit more into the farm to protect the major league pitching depth. Like if I could, I would avoid trading Rodriguez over LaGrange for a starter because, dude, Elmer's your sixth best starter on the roster right now. He might be your fifth best starter on the roster. I think he's better than Ryan Yarbrough, potentially. Like, that's on the table here. So it's not to say that the Yankees need to be gung-ho about trading LaGrange, but if it's that or striking out, you've got to overpay. But if like it's overpay said, or think, strike out, got to do it.
I'd rather just spend money on Chris Bassitt than go
and – I agree. But will they?
Wait, Ryan, are you saying you would you rather trade LaGrange for Peralta or sign Bassitt?
Okay, that's different.
I'd rather sign Bassitt 1,000,000% of the time.
I agree because you can at least bank on the idea that, okay, I have LaGrange. He is not part of my starting depth maybe, but he might be part of my major league bullpen depth in like May. Okay. So like, how do I put this? I'm operating under the belief that they will not sign a starting pitcher. I'm not making the argument that they should not consider signing a starting pitcher. I'm making the argument – they shouldn't consider it, and they should rather trade LaGrange in an overpay. But that, given that I don't believe they will, they need to be willing to they have to be willing to concede something.
Okay, can I ask Jacob a question? Jacob, would you rather not add anybody or trade LaGrange for Peralta?
Man, I think that's a loaded question. I think there's always got to be a better option than that. I cannot get behind trading for a rental. The issue is. There's always going to be more pitchers to trade for. If anything, I'd rather go out and trade for a Chris Bubich whose arm's hanging off the bone and try to get him cheap and gamble on him. I'd rather do that than trade a big haul for 1 year of Freddie.
And that's totally fair. Like, if you give me other options, like if you're like, hey, Ryan, you know, we can trade for Mackenzie Gore, who's a worse pitcher, but we don't have to trade Carlos LaGrange. Like, the package is a little more like flexible for what you're dealing. Like, they want Jason Moore.
Even I'd be willing to trade LaGrange for Gore because you're getting 2 years of Gore. And
just saying, if you want to argue, like, I don't want to make it seem like I only want Peralta as well. Like, I really like Mackenzie Gore. I don't want to make it seem like I'm being rigid in the sense of, like, it has to be Peralta, but more so that emphasizing the point that they can't strike out. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, I get what you're saying, but I don't think we should force ourselves into something that doesn't make sense value-wise just because we need to make a move. And I get it. You don't want to go in with such a weak rotation that we have right now. But there are options out there for cheaper that you can live through the first part of the season before Rodon and Cole get back. There are options there. And then you could also think about the trade deadline. There's going to be options at the trade deadline that you could trade for. And who knows what the cost is going to be then, but I'd rather take the risk and get some of these guys back and see where we're at in July before dedicating such a big piece for a one-year rental.
Hey, that's fair. Look, again, I just want a starter. It doesn't have to be an ace. I just want a starter. And Peralta also isn't an ace, but that's neither here nor there.
But that's the thing, right? If it was Corbin Burnes again, then I'd be like, all right, maybe we do that. Corbin Burnes is a true number one starter. But the fact that Peralta is like that tier or half tier below is like, yeah, you can't be not an ace and also a rental and expect us to give half of our very shallow farm for that. Like, you know what I mean? I just can't get behind that. I just don't think the fit is there. If Peralta's going to get traded, it makes a lot more sense to a team like the Mets or like Seattle, who has a very deep farm.
Yeah, again, we'll see, I think, how this ends up playing out, because there's an argument to be made that there could also be a starter that none of us are thinking about. Because that is – the Yankees are good at that. The Yankees are very good at the whole, like, we're going to bring in some guy you never heard of or that you didn't have on your radar. It's not to say it's a guy who sucks, but it's a guy who just didn't think was going to get traded to you. I had no belief they were going to ever trade for Josh Donaldson, for example. I know that's like a bad memory example, but did you guys think that was going to happen? No, especially if they're called on a freaking ace. But with that in mind, our questions from our mailbag, which I want to thank our viewers. Thank you guys so much for submitting these questions, are tied to a lot of things we talk about, but I think allow us to talk about this in a way that's a little more, you know, explore. Let's you know, explore some scenarios. First one's from at RJNYY0 on Twitter, and he asks, what do you realistically think the rest of the winter looks like? Chris, we'll start with you.
I think Bellinger and then a reliever, I think, is kind of how we finish. I don't think we add a starter the rest of the winter.
I think Jacob, where are you at with this?
I think we'll add a starter. I think it'll be either Gore or, like you said, someone who no one's thinking about right now, or we'll get one of the veteran guys late in the offseason when it becomes cheaper. Because that's what happens, right? Like you saw last season, Nick Pivetta went for, what, $15 million a year in February? Some of these starters are going to be hanging around there, and if we really need someone, we can go out and get one late. So I think we're going to – Bellinger, to me, like I said, is about 80% chance coming back, and then he's pretty much the only other position player I think we'll add. And then – maybe a reliever, and then maybe a free agent starter or a trade.
Me, personally, I still think Bellinger comes back, and I think they trade for a starter, but it also comes with a reliever. I think they do both in one move. I don't know who that is. I don't have a good guess, but that's my guess on, like, a general framework. It's not too different from where I was at, like, a couple of weeks ago, but we'll see what ends up happening. And I want to appreciate that question. I think it's a good question. It's a pretty straightforward one. The next question comes from AP Sherbo. I think that's how you pronounce it. I could be wrong. Keep one and ship one. Jason Dominguez or Spencer Jones? Jacob, we'll start with you because I know Chris, Spencer Jones is your guy.
I hate to say this, man. I love Jason, but I just think for our situation, for the fit on this team, I think I have to ship Dominguez and keep Jones. And let me tell you why. Jason Dominguez has not shown the ability to play the outfield. We have the biggest left field in baseball. The Yankees organization views the Yankee Stadium left field as basically another center fielder. It matters a ton to how we build this team. It matters a ton for how the pitchers play in our park. And Jason just doesn't have it in the outfield. Maybe he'll surprise me. He'll make some progression this year. But from what we've seen so far, he doesn't have it. I love the bat from the left side. But he can't hit righty, he can't hit lefties, he's not shown the ability to hit lefties so far at the big league level. So what we have right now is a platoon DH on a team that needs a good defensive left fielder. That fit is not there. I think he could still be a really good hitter, he can improve in a lot of these ways, and I think the ground floor for him as a lefty bat against righties, which is very important, is very high. I think this guy could be a 120-130 WRC plus bat in the future. But I don't think that future is going to be with us, unfortunately. And Spencer Jones, he brings a very high floor on defense, very athletic. He's a massive gamble as a hitter, but, I mean, so was Aaron Judge. This is a guy who's can mash it to all parks. This is a guy who, if it works out, he's a 45-50 homer per year bat. I think it's worth the gamble because you know he's going to be playing that good center field defense, and you know that he's a great athlete.
I'm Team Spencer Jones. I like Dominguez a lot, but you know, it's just like the effortless touch, man. The effortless power that Spencer has, I think, is so intriguing. I also think he can play center field for a long time. I mean, he's young, super athletic, really good instincts. I'm really high on Spencer's ability to play defense, so I'm going Spencer. But I do like them both. I like them both, generally speaking.
I think for me, with the current roster construction, I would say Jason's a guy I keep. But if Bellinger comes back, I'd say Spencer Jones. Like, you need center fielders, right? Mm-hmm. You just need center fielders. I don't know how you guys feel about this, but it's not talked about enough that he's our backup center fielder right now. Like, what is your guys' thoughts on that? And that he's the backup center fielder. He's the only other guy on the 40-man who can play it, bro. Like, that's only him and Grisham.
That's the value. That's the value. Especially, like, you know, as Grish gets older, Grish was dealing with that hamstring injury last year. He looked really rough at times.
He could not move, dude.
He could not move at all. It was a bad deal. And it's like, you know, I don't know. I think, yeah, it doesn't get talked about enough. Spencer Jones, backup center fielder, honestly kind of cements the answer even more for me.
Hey, what about I got a little idea here to float out to this podcast. I think a great fit for Dominguez, if we were to re-sign Bellinger and Dominguez becomes expendable, I think a great fit would be Cincinnati. Small outfield, the power would play there. It would give him he'd be out of the spotlight, have more time to develop. The bat should play, and the defense should be able to be hidden a little bit more. They're going to have to trade a starter soon because they got some guys coming up. They got a pretty full rotation: Nick Lodolo, Brady Singer, Andrew Abbott. For Jason Dominguez, what do we think?
I think my number one thing with Spencer Jones is the fact that he has so much pop and can play center. Like, there is not – he doesn't have to be a good hitter to be a good player. I've said this so much about him as a prospect. He does not have to have, like, a 120 OPS plus for him to be a guy that I want playing every single day. He puts up a 105 OPS plus and is a center fielder. Probably somebody I want playing every single freaking day. Like, maybe you bring in a fourth outfielder who hits from the right-handed side, but, like, you know what? Honestly, like, you could if I knew I was going to get a 100 OPS plus from Spencer Jones, I would put him in center field tomorrow.
Ryan, what would you trade to get Nick Lodolo?
Spencer Jones, a lot.
Would like you?
Jones,
would you
Dominguez?
Would you center it around Spencer? Would you center it around Dominguez?
Okay, so position player wise, I think Dominguez has more immediate value to a team like that from the offensive side because he can't hit. But I also think he has more value. Jones has more value arguably because he's a good defender, and that team stinks defensively. I don't know if you guys have seen their defensive numbers. Terrible. Pitching wise, I think you also have things that intrigue them. Warren is an arm who has multiple years of control. Rodriguez is an arm who's got multiple years of control. Although I will say, I think I'm the most averse to trading him of all the tradable pitchers. I don't think Heel has much value to them because Lodolo has 2 years of control. Heel has 3. Not really the gap you're looking for in years of control for you to make that deal. But maybe they're interested. I would love Nick Lodolo. You guys know how I feel about him. That's my freaking guy. I know I kind of opened with like a positive Jones take, but obviously I would trade him in this deal. The only untouchables for me here would be Lombard, Dax, and like Elmer's not untouchable.
Ooh, Dax. Dax has made it to untouchable territory for you.
Oh, Dax is like Dax. I think might be their best prospect by the end of the
night. I was just curious because we haven't talked about our new untouchables at this point. So,
and I freaking love Dax, dude. Okay. Like, I love the guy.
Great name.
He's a great too. Like the people like I talk to like do a lot of prospect lists for like bigger outlets. They've said a lot of good things. Like, I haven't found someone who's like, "Yo, dude, slow your roll, man." I'm usually like, "Yeah, you know, I think he could be a top 100 prospect." They're like, "Dude, I'm thinking about throwing him in the top 50." I'm like, "Oh, okay, all right." Like, I might be behind the eight ball. I thought I was, you know, I thought I was high on this guy. I'm not. But Elmer, to me, you know, an underrated part of his value is that he can start this. Like, he can start in March. So you have to. If you trade him away, you're trading pitching depth. That has to be part of that conversation too. Any final thoughts you guys have on the keep ship starters? Anything of that nature?
Mm-mm.
All right, well, we'll move on to our final question from Joel Moss 16. This is a good one. Who do you predict will be the Yankees' left fielder and shortstop on opening day in San Francisco? I think given the recent Bellinger news, the left field thing becomes a little more open-minded. And I've got a take at shortstop that I'm waiting. I'll go last, but Jacob, I'll start with you, man.
I mean, I think it's going to be Bellinger and Caballero because Volpe's going to be out until probably around March or till May or June. So I think it's the easiest answer. I think it's the most realistic. We traded for Caballero for a reason. It's to give us that shortstop depth because we had nobody behind Volpe for multiple years. And I think it'll be Caballero and Volpe for this year. I can't really see anything. I can't really see it going another way.
Caballero power surge coming. Shout out Driveline. Showed off some. I think he had one home run randomly 430 this year against Boston. Yeah, I got Caballero, Belly.
I think it'll be Belly. But I will tell you, I think what the Yankees could do at shortstop, which I want to them to try, I just want to see what it looks like. They should platoon Cabrera and Caballero to open the year. They should, like, because Cabrera's had, like, years where he's been good against righties, and then he's kind of been up and down, but I think he's mostly, like, a capable hitter against righties. Caballero sucks against righties. Caballero's terrible against righties. And I think that this should be a thing that they deploy, because I think that when Volpe comes back, Volpe's obviously your best starter against, like, he's going to start, and I think he's your best starter against lefties, even given what Caballero does against lefties. Because Caballero should get some reps in the corner outfield as well and get some, like, he should, if the Yankees don't sign a fourth outfielder, which is fine, like, that's okay. If they keep Jason, like, that's okay. I don't care. Caballero should be fighting for, like, outings in left field against lefties and put Bellinger in center type stuff. Like, I want Caballero to never be looked at as a full-time starter. I think we are doing a lot to him and are only setting him up to be looked unfavorably by hyping him up as this, oh, he's going to steal Volpe's job, this, that, and the third. Like, Caballero's values, you can literally plug him in the eighth inning, and he is going to steal that base. He is going to steal that base. Like, the reason I picked this question was to kind of, like, talk a little bit about Caballero in the sense of, I love Caballero. He's awesome. Vibes guy. This, that, the third. All that. Cool. Great. But I think what we're going to – Jacob had a great take on this, and I'm stealing this a little bit from you, Jacob. He's the backup quarterback, man. He's not the starting quarterback, and he's getting a lot of – he's Malik Willis. You start Malik Willis 17 games, you're not touching the postseason. But he's cool because he slots in for the Packers every now and then. He throws some touchdowns. Great, cool. But it's not going
to
work.
I just think the funny thing about him is people were, like, itching for him to start at the end of last season. He's pretty much Volpe light. Like, he's the same guy. He's the same guy. He runs the bases a bit better. But
with less power.
Yeah.
And also – do you know how much you're limiting by just not letting him play any other position? Is he not more valuable as, like, a guy you can sit Grisham for against lefties than he is as a guy to replace Volpe against lefties with? Like, in my opinion, I'm not saying you have to try that with Caballero, but I'm saying I think there's more value to the roster that he'd provide taking, like, left-handed at-bats away from Grisham or from this guy or that guy than he would be from taking them away from Volpe.
Before Volpe gets back, you're talking about you want to play Cabrera at shortstop. I don't. If Cabrera,
I
want to
get him reps.
If Cabrera,
Caballero, I want to get reps all over.
I think that's fair, but if Cabrera, I don't know if Cabrera can play shortstop. I don't know if he can defend at the position well enough to be worth it. Because we know for a fact that Caballero is a really good shortstop, and I feel like if you're going to be taking that big of a hit on defense, you need to. It has to be for a reason. And Cabrera is okay bat. Like, I don't know. I feel like the idea of having Caballero pinch running or getting reps in the outfield in April isn't that compelling to me, but that's going to be really important when it comes to playoff time. Yeah, but I don't know. Like, I think he should be the starting shortstop until Volpe gets back, or unless he's, like, really, really bad, struggling against righties. But I'd pencil him as the everyday shortstop, and then have Oswaldo be the utility guy.
That's totally fair. I think there aren't a lot of avenues for him to start, if that makes sense. Like, and if Oswaldo Cabrera doesn't play, like, I think people are overlooking the fact that he might not really have a spot on this team. And I think the shortstop opening is the only opportunity for him to have some level of utility. Because if you look at the roster, like, he's not going to play third over McMahon against righties. You have Rosario and Caballero, who are better options for that. You're not going to play him at shortstop over Caballero or Volpe. Like, I think he's the third best defender in that group if it comes down to, like, needing one starter. But I do think where Cabrera does have a little bit of an edge over those two is he might be better against righties, and that has some utility in the situation where, like, Volpe isn't good, doesn't recover right, Caballero's leaned on more. He's not going to play for Jazz. He's not going to play for Rice.
Yeah, I mean,
he's not an outfielder.
You can see how he's looking in the spring, but I don't know.
Yes.
I just don't have – like, he'll have chances to get reps at short, but I just don't think – if we're in April, if we're in, like, mid to late April and Volpe's still a month off, I feel like it's going to be It would take a lot of big disparity between Cabrera and Caballero's bat for me to think it's worth it to give Cabrera regular reps. Like I think we know who this guy is at this point. You know what I mean? I don't think unless he makes a big leap in some way that we see in the spring. I'm not that interested in him long term.
I agree that I'm not interested in him long term. Like I'm kind of soured on the player. I think if there is any avenue to use him, and if you tendered him a contract. You haven't traded him. Like, he doesn't really have a lot of trade value, I'd imagine. Like, you kind of... This is kind of it for him.
He has options. He's just going to
be this year. But, like, I'm saying, like, this is the year. This is it. If he's not a productive player, you cut him. Is my kind of view. Like, he's arbitration eligible. You're not going to pay him, what, like, $2 million, $3 million to, like, not play for you in like, 2027. I just view it as, like, a good chance to get him reps, and it's a place where you would expect Caballero to be generally unproductive anyways. So it's, like, you could even argue just having a lefty in the box against, like, a crappy righty is probably better than having, like, a righty in the box. And, again, I know I'm, like, getting really crazy with, like, very specific details, but this is just where we're at in the offseason. I kind of just want to see Boone play around with all the versatility he has in his roster. I'm not saying he doesn't do this generally, but if he does this properly with the guys like a Cabrera and a Caballero, I think there's some added value to have to this roster. Like, yeah, I think I would totally, toy around with them.
I think that's
like
a totally fair conversation to have when we get to spring training, because if he's hitting well, then it's like, sure, he should get some more of those reps at short, but I don't know.
Are we buying in on Paul DeJong getting some crazy reps?
Oh, yeah, I forgot we signed him too.
Yeah, we want Paul DeJong reps. I'm feeling Paul DeJong, man. I'm feeling him. Guy's a dog.
Low key, I feel like he probably has a better chance to get shortstop reps than Cabrera. I'm not gonna lie.
I don't think the issue is just that he's right-handed. Like, I'd play Caballero over him just because, yeah, like Caballero can run a little bit. But that's neither here nor there. I mean, that's just the state of the shortstop position. It's not in a great spot. Hopefully, health provides a stable starter in at least the defensive sense of things. Like, Volpe's just set and forget. Play him. Don't worry about like the offense, because he's not going to really hit, but just hope you're going to get the defense production.
Complain about him on Twitter every single I make the excuses for him. He's such a good battleground for Yankees Twitter that it's going to be tough without him those first like 6 or 7 weeks. Going to be tough without Volpe to argue about on Twitter. So
yeah, it'll be funny, because if Caballero or like has like the Cabrera start, do you guys remember when Cabrera got off that crazy start in 24? That'll be fun. Yeah. That'll be fun discourse.
Oh, dude. Oh, my God.
But it's got to be in that specific way, too, where it's like a 400 BABIP and like a 300 slugging percentage. That has to be how it is.
It's going
to
be a bullshit, like, the fakest 850 OPS you've ever seen in April, and he's going to be the Volpe replacement permanently on Twitter. So that'll be fun.
Well, we'll see what ends up happening here. Guys, do you have any final notes before we sign off here? All right. Well, look, guys, thank you for supporting the page here on Fireside Yankees. If you enjoyed this video, you enjoyed this podcast, make sure you like and subscribe. If you're listening to this on Apple or Spotify, make sure to drop a 5-star rating. Leave a comment. We really appreciate it. And check out our social media pages, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, Facebook, and, of course, it's YouTube. We've got a Patreon as well. Link to that will be in the description. I'll put the members up here on the screen. Thank you guys for tuning in. And I also want to shout out Jacob's YouTube channel, And That's Baseball, and Chris's YouTube channel, Dead Air Sports. They've got content. They've got content. It isn't just Yankee content. It's general baseball for Jacob. A lot of football content for Chris. So if you guys want to keep the sports conversation going, but you're a little Yankeed out, totally fine. Go check out their channels. Watch yourself. There's a lot of good replayability in these videos, too. You could watch a video from 5 months ago and still get the same entertainment value. I highly recommend. And we'll see you guys in the next one. Let's go, Yankees. Peace out, everybody.